MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network is presented by BetSGPN. BetSGPN is where you'll find all of the best sportsbook promotions and deposit bonuses. Head on over to BetSGPN.com because BetSGPN is your home for online sports betting. Terms and conditions apply. Void where prohibited. Must be 21 plus. Have a gambling problem? Please call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services. We're also brought to you by BetQL. BetQL is your home for the info that you need to make yourself a smarter better. NBA, college basketball, and the NHL, they've got you covered. Just go to BetQL.com, promo code SGP30. That's BetQL.com, promo code SGP30 for 30% off. And we're also brought to you by Better Than Vegas. Better Than Vegas is the home for the avid sports bettor, providing insights, analysis, and free betting picks. Better Than Vegas, it's like YouTube for sports betting. Make sure to subscribe to our page so you don't miss a pick at sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And finally, we're brought to you by Better Edge. Better Edge is your home for no vig betting. That's right, no vig betting that is legal in 40 states. Sign up at betteredge.com, promo code SGP for a free $10 bet. That's BETTOREdge.com, promo code SGP.
Hello, hello, and welcome to the MMA Gambling Podcast on the Sports Gambling Podcast Network, episode 19. We're almost at our big episode 20, which will be a huge birthday celebration, I'm sure. We'll have something massive planned, probably. I'm your host, Jeff Fox. I am one of the site editors and writers at Sports Gambling Podcast, as well as running the MMA exclusive site, MMA-manifesto.com. And I'm crummy at picking fights, as you'll find out very, very soon. First, let's introduce someone who'll probably gloat this week. So let's get this over with. The woohooing would be my co-host, who actually had a good week. He also hosts the Top Turtle MMA podcast and the Prelim Picker, which he probably had a good week on those two picking fights, since they're the same as he picked on our show last week. That will be Daniel Gumby Vreeland, who went 9-6 last week.
9-6. And actually, some of the ones I was the most confident in didn't work, but we'll get to those in a second. But 9-6, and I didn't do the math out. Profitable 9-6, or did I?
No.
No, still. This is the problem with picking every fight.
Yeah, which is crazy. You hit 60%. You lost $1.20.
If
you bet $100 on every fight,
That's partially because when you bet $100 on Amanda Nunes, yeah, you win like 32 cents.
we made $9.09 off that fight. Yes, I went 6-9. I had a very poor night, and I was down $626, which I really am down because I totally follow my advice and I make all the bets I tell everyone else to make, and I make them all for $100. So, I'm in bad shape. For the year of 2021, I am down to 40-48, which is like not very good. Dan would be at 35-43. So he's creeping up a bit closer. He's still not there yet. So I'm at what, 45%, and Dan, let the spreadsheet do the work for me. Dan's at 40%. So he's creeping up. He's still down like $500 more than I am. As for our locks, we both hit our locks, which is after the first week of us having a lock pick, both those fights fell through. Last week, both our fights that we picked as locks came through at UFC 259. I had Euros Medic, or Medic, I think they were saying on the broadcast, which is what we thought his name was going to be. He came through. He looked fantastic. I had him at -170, so I made 58.82 off that. And Dan had Alexander Rakic, who did not look so hot, but he won anyway, -165. So that Dan was up 60-61 for that. So we hit our locks, which is the important thing.
Yeah,
you had a bunch more though.
Yeah, I hit a bunch more too, but I think you're right about Rancic. He didn't look real great, but also he fought the fight that was being presented to him. Like, he was never in any danger of losing that fight, right? Like, Santos never landed anything that looked close to a devastating blow. So I will say that while he didn't look good in a traditional sense, he also – he did exactly what he needed to win, which is kind of what I thought he was going to do. I thought he was going to be more aggressive because he was going to be presented with a more aggressive fight, but hey, props to him for winning whatever he could. And also props to us for both hitting, I mean, they're favorites, but slight favorites that would have made you guys money. So make sure you listen to our locks at the end of the show too. That's right, we have good advice at the end of the show as well as the beginning of the show.
Yeah, and in between, not so much. The beginning of the show, we tell you what we should have done, so that's good advice. And then the end of the show, we tell you our lock picks, but the picks in between, take it with a grain of salt. Except Dan, I think, is on the upswing now, so who knows? This could be onward and upward for him. Weird night of fights. We had, it started off some exciting stuff, and then we had like a big drag in the middle, it seemed, of not so exciting stuff, and then we had some nonsense in the championship fight. So not really what you could have predicted.
Yeah, nonsense is a great way to put it. Like, it was a lot of bizarre things. Like, fights you thought would deliver didn't. Fights that you didn't think would deliver did. And then, obviously, the weirdness of the first title being, changing hands due to a DQ.
Right. So, in the main event, Jan Błachowicz shocked the world and beat Israel Adesanya. I don't agree with the 10-8 he was given for round five, but I thought he had won the fight. The scorecards made it look like he steamrolled Adesanya, which wasn't the case. But I thought he won. I take it you probably agree with that you thought he won too.
So here's what I will say. First of all, congratulations to him because he won a fight that we thought he could win. We didn't pick him to win. We thought he could win, but also we never thought he could win the way he did. Right, like he won a fight by outpointing Adesanya on the feet and on the ground, which we thought if he was going to win, he was going to go in there and steamroll him, or he's going to throw a big right and that was going to land or something like that. So props to him first and foremost. But there's no debating that Jan Błachowicz won the fourth and fifth rounds, right? Like he got the takedowns, he controlled on the ground, he even did damage on the ground. So he wins the fourth and fifth. I basically had rounds 1, 2, and 3 as a coin flip. And I'm going to be honest, I was leaning Israel Adesanya on most of them. In the second round, I believe it was, I kind of leaned Jan. So when those scorecards were coming in, even though the announcers were very pro-Jan and if you're looking around Twitter, it was very pro-Jan. Part of me was still like, there's a chance Adesanya won 1, 2, and 3. I was surprised that judges had only given him one of those three rounds. And I haven't looked at the judges' scorecards. It was probably a different round for each one of them, if I note the judges. And the 10-8 is absolutely egregious. I think that there's no reason to give Jan Błachowicz a 10-8 in any of those rounds. The domination that he showed on the ground was not anywhere near close to what I would consider the criteria needing for that.
Right. Yeah, he never had him in danger. He never had him close to finishing him, which basically I think is what 10-8 really should be. Maybe it's not in the rules. I haven't read the rules, so I don't know for sure, but is that not the case?
I've read the rules, and it doesn't need you to like almost finish him, but it needs you to have done like significant damage, and it needs to be like moderately one-sided. It even doesn't say like the person doesn't have to mount no offense, but like substantially less. And like in all of those rounds, despite the fact that like 3 minutes on top is Jan Błachowicz and Israel pretty much doing nothing, there was like a minute and a half to 2 minutes at the beginning where it was like pretty much a 50-50 striking battle at that point. And maybe even one of those rounds you lean towards Adesanya on the feet. So with all of that, are we just going to give anybody who gives 3 minutes of top game a 10-8? Like, I think that that's kind of absurd. So, I would have to go back and watch it again to say with 100% certainty, but my initial reaction was when I heard that, two different judges had given 10-8s, I thought that was definitely, definitely, definitely not warranted.
Yeah. Regardless of what the rules say, you generally don't see it unless a fighter is in serious trouble. You generally don't see a guy get 10-8'd, a guy or gal get 10-8'd unless they are getting pieced up seriously, or at the verge of either getting tapped out or beat up into submission, that type of thing. As for the judges, one of them gave Adesanya the third, one gave him the second, is how that broke down. Everyone gave Błachowicz the first, and then two out of three gave him the second round, and then all of them gave him the third and the fourth. I mean, sorry, the fourth and the fifth. So I thought Adesanya would – he doesn't seem upset one bit that he lost. I thought he'd be claiming that he won. Usually any kind of decision victory, the person on the losing end claims that they won, but he seems to not really care whatsoever that he got rid of the zero in his record.
Yeah, well, and I think there's probably multiple levels to that. First of all, he is one of those fighters who doesn't just talk about being like a quote-unquote martial artist, but he actually like lives that mentality where he's like trying to learn his art, and that's the most important thing in his world. So like in a sense, I think that's some of it. I think still having the middleweight title to throw over his shoulder and defend and to expand his legacy, I think that's some of it. And thirdly, I think also the fact that the golden goose that is John Jones is seemingly off the table anyway. John Jones got huge. Like, the dude looks massive. He looks like one of his brothers now. So I just think probably all of those things together. Like, you know, the reason he was going up to light heavyweight, I thought originally, was to chase Jones. Then Jones is off the table. He's still got his middleweight title. You know, like, and ultimately, too, I think he recognizes that, like, this is a sport where at a certain point in time you lose. You know, his idol is, or he stated before that he looked up to his whole career, Anderson Silva. Like, you just know that at some point in time, if you're an Anderson Silva fan, your time comes. So I think he's going to go back down. He's probably going to beat the hell out of Costa again. He's probably going to beat the hell out of Robert Whittaker again. He's going to beat Darren Till if he ever figures it out. He'll go beat Marvin Vettori again, and we'll still be talking about him as one of the great middleweights of all time.
Right. So who do you think next for him, Costa or Whittaker? I take it, right? Whoever wins that fight coming up.
Yeah, I think that's the only answer. I mean, like, Marvin Vettori, yeah. I think is he fighting Darren Till? I think somewhere
sounds right,
in there.
Yeah.
And like, he's a viable option, but ultimately, yeah, I think Whittaker's done enough, in my opinion, to already warrant it. So if he goes out and beats Costa, that's the real answer. And Costa's trying to talk his way into a second one, so I hope to God that Whittaker gets it instead.
Yep. No doubt. And then sounds like Błachowicz, sounds like everyone's on the same page that Glover Teixeira is going to get the next shot, which I think everyone is happy with, inside and outside of the UFC.
Yeah, I'm souped about, because, I mean, like, he sort of feels like the Michael Bisping of the 205-pound division. Like, he was so good for so long and right in the thick of things for so long. And it just took, like, the division opening up in, like, the weirdest way for him to finally get, you know, like, if he does win this title, to finally get the title at, like, this super odd time, which is kind of what happened to Bisping, right? Like, he was chasing Anderson Silva all those years. He only got a hold of Anderson Silva when he was a shell of himself, and then he took the title off of Rockhold in the weirdest way possible. And, like, way past when, like, that was not the best Michael Bisping. Michael Bisping won the title when he was, like, not his best self. And heck, I think we're about to see Glover Teixeira do that same thing. It wouldn't be out of the realm of possibility for sure.
Except he's way older than Bisping would have been. He's what, 40?
I think he's older than Bisping anyway. Yeah, yeah. Like, never mind Bisping was when he won.
Yeah, I think he was what, born in 77, possibly. Let me see. I might be off on that. He was 79, so he's 41 right now. So he could be 42 by the time he gets the title shot. So yeah, that would be quite an underdog story there. So no underdog story coming through in the co-main event. It went the way everyone expected it. Amanda Nunes steamrolled Megan Anderson. Their power is noticeable as Amanda Nunes. Like, once she hits people, it's very, very noticeable on the opponent's face and their body language that they've never felt anything like that before. You don't generally see that in the sport where everyone is able to keep poker faces most of the time.
Yeah, and the interesting thing to me, too, that it just tipped it off so much that she just hits different, is when she slugged Megan Anderson, and Megan Anderson, she had that panicked look, but then she also shot for, like, that weird sloppy baby deer leg takedown. And I was just like, oh, Megan Anderson is shooting a takedown. This has gone badly for her. Like, you know, like, that's not what you want to see. So, yeah, and like, hey, I said that it was going to happen on the ground most likely. If you listened last week, I think I said ground and pound if I go back. But I said it was going to happen on the ground. I didn't think it was going to get there this way. But, like, I mean, Amanda Nunes is so much better than all of the other women in whatever there is for a featherweight division and all of the bantamweight division. So this could be expected. Again, I would never advise betting on somebody at negative 1,000. But if there was somebody to bet on at that number, it's certainly her.
Yeah, and then when you do dive for a takedown to try to save yourself, she's got incredible. She stuffed her immediately, and then it turned her, basically put her on her back and tapped her out almost immediately. Like, she, there's no holes in her game whatsoever.
Yeah, and the submission game too is really nuanced too. Like, she, yep, she seemed like she was falling off the top of Megan Anderson's back, and a lot of people just dive on that armbar. And she, instead threading that reverse triangle, was so smart because it, like, gave her another level of control to finish the armbar. And I mean, she could have finished the inverted or the reverse triangle from there too, because that's possible if you pull up on the arm the right way. So, like, I mean, like, it's clear that she's not just a big power puncher who can punch Cyborg into the shadow realm. She's also, like, an amazing jiu-jitsu artist as well. So, yeah, I don't see anybody beating her for the conceivable future until she's decided to retire or she becomes old and decrepit.
Right. Now, I expect this is probably the end of the featherweight division. There's no up and comers. There's no, you know, there's really no point in having this division, because they don't need the division to showcase Amanda Nunes, because she fights a bantamweight also. So there's really no purpose for the division whatsoever.
It's so weird to me that they keep trying to, like, pretend it's a real division, and I think it's just so that they can leave another belt on Nunes. You know, and like, maybe they just keep running these one-offs, right? Like, they pick up a couple of contenders, make them fight, and then, like, oh, okay, well, the winner gets Nunes, which it seems like, by the way, they're doing again, because Felicia Spencer has got a fight with Danielle Wolfe, who, coming off the Contender Series, the only featherweight ever to fight on the Contender Series. She's 1-0 in MMA. She didn't look great doing it, but I almost guarantee you, if she beats Felicia Spencer by some miracle — she's not, she's going to get taken down and submitted, spoiler alert — but if she by some miracle beats Felicia Spencer, I guarantee we're going to see Amanda Nunes back at featherweight to defend the belt against Danielle Wolfe.
So basically, it's the Chris Cyborg method of booking. You just, you know,
you find what's there,
and throw it to the wolves.
And the thing I will say about this, though, is while I don't like that they keep doing that, it is giving the bantamweight division a chance to, like, shake itself out, so we don't just see her fight Holly Holm every other weekend, like, or Jermaine Durandamy for that matter. So, like, I guess in that sense, I don't mind it, but, like, I don't know. It just seems like a weird move to not just, like, I mean, like, what would stop them from just doing, like, an Ultimate Fighter tournament at that weight and then having, you know, 16 women in that division, even just 16, so that you could hang a rankings on your website and not look like, you know, like this ridiculous thing where you just put Amanda Nunes' face at the top and then there are no names below her.
Yeah, I know. But it's silly. Speaking of Holly Holm, apparently she is out of her upcoming fight against Juliana Pena. So now Pena is campaigning to fight Nunes next, I assume, at bantamweight. And Dana White's considering it, is what the headlines say. So that could be what's next. Before I ask you what's next for Nunes, that could be it. Another Juliana Pena, who she will run over also.
Yeah, I think that's going to be it. I'm not sure she's the right person to, because let's be honest, like, didn't she just get submitted by Jermaine Durandamy? And like, so then why isn't Jermaine Durandamy or somebody like that fighting? So, like, that's a weird move for me, but, like, also, People don't want to see Amanda Nunes in rematches that she beat the hell out of the person the first time. So I guess, you know, bring us the new contender and watch her kill her too. So
yes,
not exciting, but at the same time exciting because you're going to get to see Amanda Nunes.
It's like the gladiator days, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
Watch her kill her.
Yeah.
All right. Before we break down the schmozzle of the Bantamweight fair, let's get one of these ad reads. Because we got our new one this week. This is an exciting one. It's for BetSGPN. That would be us, the Sports Gambling Podcast Network. We're proud to announce we've just launched BetSGPN. So it's betsgpn.com. It's your home for all the best online sportsbook promotions. Our featured sportsbook this week is PointsBet. That's what all the bets that I could find, all the lines that they have posted so far for next week's fight card, that we'll be going through in a couple minutes are from PointsBet. And they have plenty of parlays. If you like parlays, they've got you covered with a lot of parlay boosts. What else we got here? They got tons of player props and live wagering options. They want me to mention a bet I like from PointsBet. You'll be hearing that a bunch of bets I like from them coming up. Cause like I said, the lines we're using coming up, the majority of them are directly from PointsBet. So any fight I pick, unless they say I hate the line, it's one that I recommend and I like the line for. If all that isn't enough, they're offering two risk-free bets up to $2,000. That's right, up to $2,000 in risk-free bets. So make sure you go to pointsbet.com, promo code, you guessed it, SGP. So it's pointsbet.com, promo code SGP. Terms and conditions apply, void where prohibited, must be 21 plus. Have a gambling problem, call 1-800-GAMBLER for crisis counseling and referral services. There you go. I finally got to read the terms and conditions. That's exciting. I've never done that before. Void where prohibited. Very exciting.
You sounded like a pro doing it too.
There you go. I am a pro. This is episode 19, dude. I'm a pro now. All right. What do you think of that Bantamweight fight? Aljamain Sterling got the UFC Bantamweight belt around his waist briefly before he put it back down because he didn't want it that way. I think he's come to his senses now and has accepted it. But he clutched victory out of the jaws of defeat by taking a vicious illegal knee, which Peter Yan was warned right before he threw it that he shouldn't throw it because it's illegal. So that was quite the ending to a championship fight, a fight everyone was looking for. The fight basically everyone was looking forward to the most on this fight card.
Yeah, it was weird. And I will say this too. It was also weird because the judges' scorecards were in a weird place, right? Like they went and got the judges' scorecards. Aljamain Sterling up on one of them. He's down on the other two, and I think he was probably losing that fourth round. The momentum didn't seem to be in his favor, but the momentum had shifted a bunch of times really quickly in that fight anyway, so it wasn't, you know, inconceivable to think he could have possibly squeaked out that fourth round or, you know, wound up winning the decision. Ultimately, I do think Jan was going to win, probably by decision. It was such a weird move. You know, and it's upsetting for him, and I get that, but like, I mean, it's the right call. And the other thing I will say about just like accepting the title is like the other option was is to continue fighting, clearly impaired, continue fighting.
Yeah.
And you know, for everybody out there saying he was faking it and laying it on, like, dude, you don't cry about getting the title upset that's how you have to take it. After you've like, if that's the case, he wouldn't have taken it that way, right? Like, he was very visibly upset, and to say that he faked it, that's absurd. But yeah, like, he could have continued fighting. Jan probably would have won, and he probably wouldn't have gotten a rematch. At least now this sets up the rematch, which, you know, before you even ask, that's the right move. Next, Jan is probably the rightful champion if he wasn't a moron. And let me be straight, he is a moron for throwing that knee. So if they decided to move on from him for a fight or two as well, I wouldn't even mind that, because, like, screw him for doing that. But with that being said, you know, like, this is a good matchup. You just run them again. Meanwhile, you can run, you know, TJ Dillashaw versus Corey Sanhagen, or TJ Dillashaw versus Rob Font, or Rob Font versus Corey Sanhagen, and then the winner gets those. So this is probably going to take a while to book again, but yeah, weird circumstances. I mean, the right calls were made all around. Peter Yan is a moron. That's pretty much tackles the whole thing.
Yeah, lots to unpack, but that's the main takeaway. It's not like he didn't know. Well, apparently he didn't know the rules, but even though he was told, clearly told, that he should not throw any kind of kicks or knees. He was told punches only right before he threw it. He claims he didn't want to throw an illegal blow, but he did. He clearly made a choice to do it. No one made him do it, and he was clearly told that if he had done it, it was going to be illegal. Sterling obviously wasn't faking. He was acting like a guy who had just been knocked out, basically. That accounts for a lot of his emotion after the fight also, because he probably didn't know what was going on. I think Jan was going to win. What I thought was going to put him over the top before in predicting him to win, I think was coming through. His power, his striking power plus his actual physical strength, and his, solid enough grappling to hold off Sterling. Sterling did look fantastic, did gas a bit, but he kept on fighting. But yeah, strange ending to the fight, and more than likely we're going to see the rematch. I don't see any reason why we wouldn't see it, and probably Sandhagen versus Dillashaw probably makes the most sense to keep the division moving and have another challenger ready to roll.
Yeah, I think so too, but it does suck for Rob Font, who is seemingly mm-hmm. right about there, and especially if Peter Yan walks out of this having won, and you can sort of relegate Aljamain Sterling down a level, you probably get Corey Sandhagen getting that immediate title shot, and then you get Rob Font against Dillashaw. So it sort of sucks for him, who winds up the odd man out in this situation.
Right. That always seems to be the case. So there's always going to be at least one man or woman that's the odd man out. So let's move on to this week's card, Edwards versus Muhammad, which I see a couple fights have just fallen off also, which is not good. But yeah, that last week's card, nothing fell off.
We ended up with 15 fights.
Crazy. I'm sure they did not want to have 15 fights, and they were not planning on having 15 fights. They just did that to be safe, because ton of fights fall through, and they ended up having to cram all these fights into the allotted TV time.
Yeah, I loved the pacing of that. Give me that pacing every week.
Exactly. Well, this week, I think we're down to 13, maybe even 12. Before we get to that, let me tell you about something. Some other awesome sponsor of ours, which would be BetQL. Do you want to get an advantage over the sportsbook when it comes to betting? Then you need to download BetQL, the only app you'll need to make smart bets. BetQL has sharp data for college basketball, NBA, and the NHL. So if you want an inside edge for who the pros are backing, you need to check out BetQL. Plus, they have tons of sportsbook offers for your state. Head over to the App Store or Google Play Store and download BetQL. I was on there this morning. I saw they had some hockey picks, which were 80% winning percentage, 75% winning percentage, which is pretty wild. That's even better than us here. Make sure you bet smarter, not harder. So head over to betql.com, enter promo code SGP30, and you get 30% off your first subscription. That's promo code SGP30, betql.com. All right. I see Ricardo Ramos. His fight has been pulled off the card.
For that one, his opponent, Zabira Tukhugov, I believe he has COVID, and then Nazrat Hakparas was supposed to fight Don Madge, which, spoiler alert, I loved the dog in that fight already. I was all on Don Madge. But he couldn't get a visa, is what I'm being told, coming from South Africa. So both of those fights are currently off, but also it should be worth noting that if you're listening to this a little bit later in the week, both Nazrat Hakparast and Ricardo Ramos are supposed to stay on the card. We just don't know their opponents yet.
They should just fight each other. They're on your weight class apart, right?
That would be terrible for Ricardo Ramos as a guy who, just first have of all, I think is vastly overrated at featherweight, fighting a dude who's an absolute tank of a lightweight. That would be very, very bad for him. But yes, I hope they find two worthy guys on the roster who are willing to take this on 6 days' notice. so we can see those two fight and we can get 15 fights and they can be in an absurdly fast pace. And this time earlier in the night, right, too, because I think it's supposed to start at 4 or something like that.
That's right. I always forget to check the starting times. I always want to give you people starting times and I always forget to check. And whoever does get slotted into those fights, pick them to lose, because short notice replacement guys do not do very well in fights. It's like 37% or something they win. All right. Yeah, this one will be starting 8 o'clock main card and 5 o'clock for the prelims at this point. It's going down from the UFC Apex once again, their home gym at the UFC campus in Las Vegas. It will be this coming Saturday. And we're talking ESPN Plus for both portions of the fights card. Let's start things off with welterweights, Matthew Semelsberger versus Jason Witt. We will go with Jason Witt first. 18-6 as a pro with 3 knockouts, 8 submissions. He lost his UFC debut and then won his last fight via submission. His loss in his debut is his only loss in his past 6 fights. He's gone 5-1 over the past 6 fights. He's at +120 in this one. Semelsberger, 7-2 as a pro, 4 knockouts, 1 submission. He won his UFC debut, which is part of a 4-fight win streak for him. He is 3 inches taller, 5 inches of reach, 6 years younger, -150. And I think I'll be riding with him unless you change my mind here.
No, I actually really love Matthew Semelsberger in this fight too, because you know, you mentioned the reach and the height advantage. I think that that's huge in this because both guys have wrestling backgrounds. Jason Witt, you know, looked pretty good wrestling his last time out, but against an opponent who doesn't have particularly good wrestling defense. And then Matthew Semelsberger could have wrestled up Carlton Minus in his debut. I actually thought that that was going to be the easiest path to victory for him. But instead, he peppered him on the feet and actually looked pretty sharp with his striking. And I think that's the difference maker here, because they both have the decent wrestling. Huge reach advantage for Semelsberger, height advantage for Semelsberger, and clearly I think he's the more polished guy on the feet. Witt's got power, but ultimately, if this winds up a stalemate and they wind up on the feet, I think Semelsberger is just going to land so often that we're going to see some bad shots from Witt. You know, we've got a decent submission game here from Semelsberger, and I actually think he's probably the better wrestler too at the end of the day. So I think Semelsberger here, and I think he's actually a pretty safe pick to win.
Oh, maybe he'll be one of our locks. We'll have to wait and see. I get first crack this week because you had first crack last week. So I'll have to make a mental note for that one. Moving on, women's strawweight, which could be Jin Yu Fry's last chance at staying in the UFC. She'll be going up against newcomer Gloria DePaula. We will break down Jin Yu Fry first. She is the former Invicta Animate champion. She's been around the sport for quite a while, a bit of a legend in the atomweight division. Unfortunately, UFC does not have one, so now she's the undersized strawweight. So in this fight, she is coming in with a 9-6 record, 1 knockout, 2 submissions. She's lost both of her UFC fights thus far after going 7-2 in Invicta, so she steamrolled people there. Grappling stats are in her favor in this fight, but we're talking about small sample size for these two women. DePaula, like I said, this will be her debut after winning on the Dana White Contender Series to get her card punched to the big show. She's 5-2 as a pro with 3 knockouts, never been finished in a fight, so she's lost 2 decision fights. She's won 2 her last 2 fights and 4 of her last 5. She's got 2 inches height, 2 inches of reach, 10 years of youth on her side. And like I said, small sample size, but striking stats are in her favor. And she's at -162. Fry's at +134. I'm not sure if I said that before. Do you think Jin Yu Fry, you think this is it for her?
I actually think she's going to win this fight.
Wow.
I'm going with Jin Yu Fry on this as an underdog for a couple of reasons. Number one, you mentioned the experience advantage she has. You know, like we're talking about Gloria DePaula here, who's, you know, by no means a bad fighter, right? Like I like Gloria DePaula, but ultimately, you know, like she's unproven at 5-2 too. If you look back at her record, you know, she beat Pauline Macias, which we mentioned before, who, you know, if I'm not mistaken, was like, is she like 4-0 when she went into the Contender Series? She like also had no fights. So like that's troublesome in the first place that that's all. And she also got like kind of taken down and thrown around by her, which, you know, granted she is a, you know, a judo specialist, but she outstruck a judo specialist with like very little striking. I mean, like Macias was being heralded as like, you know, Ronda Rousey's protege. So she's like Ronda Rousey's judo with even less striking, and she outstruck her. So like, congratulations, I guess. I don't know what to tell you. Jinyu Fry looks good on the feet when she fights on the feet, right? Like, she looked like she was getting the better of Kay Hansen, who's an absolute beast. She was even putting Kay Hansen, who is a very physically strong 115-pounder, up against the fence, which I actually think is her avenue to victory here. I think she just needs to crowd Gloria DePaula, just put her up against the fence, make her work the entire time. And I actually think Fry could wind up with a couple of takedowns here. And ultimately, as long as she stays safe on the feet, and I think she is a little bit more nuanced on the feet, but maybe with a little less power. I think as long as she stays safe there, I think that this is her fight to win using kind of a more complete MMA game.
Yeah, DePaula's her wins. She fought someone 0-3, fought someone debuting, beat someone 3-2, 3-0, and 4-0. So yeah, she's definitely at the experience disadvantage here. I'd like to pick Fry also. And like, are you sure on this one, Dan? Are you positive?
I'm not gonna say I'm sure, but I'm gonna say like, I mean, like, man, look at the people she's fought. Like Ashley Cummins, Mina Grusander, you know, Sohee Ham, who people I think, you know, badly underrate. She fought Ayaka Hamasaki twice, who's a killer at atomweight. And like, so to me, the number of people she's fought that are really tough top level people. And she's put a decent fight on all of them. It's not like she's getting blown out of the water in any of these fights. To be fighting somebody who's such a step down from everybody she's fought in the past, I mean, at plus money, I think it's worth a stab.
All right, let's do it. Let's do it. I didn't have a clear choice in this one. Let's do it, Dan. Let's go with Jinyu Fry. I'd like to see her win anyway. I like watching her fight. So, all right. Back to a men's side, bantamweight, Jonathan Martinez, Davy Grant. Let's go with Davy Grant. He's 12-4, 2 knockouts, 8 submissions, wins. All of his losses are via submission, which is interesting. He's only 3-3 in the UFC, but he's won his last two, including a knockout win, his last fight. Striking and grappling stats are in his favor. He's very hefty, plus 230, going at this point at least. Jonathan Martinez is 13-3, 7 knockouts, 2 submissions. He's never been finished in a fight. He's 4-2 in the UFC. He's also won 2 straight. He's got an inch of reach and 9 years younger. He's 9 years younger than Grant. He's at minus 300. Who are you taking in this one?
With the odds where they're at, I'm going to surprise you. I'm going to go dogs twice here early, and I'm going to go Davy Grant.
I have him too.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, because, I mean,
for that number, I figure.
Yeah, the number is the big piece for me, right? Like, if I saw Davy Grant in here at, like, plus 140, would I be at least considering Jonathan Martinez? Yes. But at negative 300, Jonathan Martinez is absolutely nobody I'm interested in. And I would say this, too, is I actually think that Davy Grant has a really good chance as long as he mixes things up. Because that's the thing for me, is that, like, he is a really good grappler. And he showed lately that he's getting better at the striking. I think he's at a striking disadvantage against Jonathan Martinez unless he forces Jonathan Martinez to wrestle a little bit, unless he forces Jonathan Martinez to defend those takedowns. Then I think Grant might actually be able to open up with the striking a little bit more. So I'm kind of hoping that happens here, especially with the numbers where they're at. And you know, it's worth noting too, Jonathan Martinez has been taken down by some guys who I do not feel are very good or very, you know, UFC caliber. I mean, he got taken down 3 times by Waleji Buren, who, you know, is not a top-notch UFC guy. He went 0-3 in the UFC, including the losing to Rolando Dye. So, like, for him to have been taken down so many times by a guy who I don't really think is a particularly good fighter, I have hope here that Davy Grant can get him down. And at the very least, like I said, mixing it up will do it for him.
All right, there you go. It's even if one of these plus money ones come through, we're good. So there you go. Back-to-back dogs for y'all people. Before we move on, let me tell you about Betterland.Vegas. Betterland.Vegas, it's like YouTube, but for what hashtag the gens only care about, which would be sports betting. Best part is you'll be able to get free video picks from the SGPN crew. I gave you nothing but losers last week. Well, actually, I gave you Amanda Nunes winner. There you go. and I told you Dan liked Aljamain Sterling, so there you go. Did the top turtle – Dan also does videos on top turtle. Did you guys have – I didn't see your videos last week. Did you have winners on that?
Oh, absolutely. We only had winners.
There you go.
I gave you last week, I gave you Tim Elliott and Alexander Rejcich, and
yeah.
Shockwave Dave popped in to tell you to put money on Jan Blankovic. So
there you go.
Yeah, not only hitting you, but hitting you with a couple of plus money picks in there.
That's what you get at BetterThan.Vegas. Make sure you do subscribe. You can subscribe to Top Turtle if you like, but make sure you subscribe to the Sports Gambling Podcast Cruise page. That would be sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. And that way you won't miss any of our videos. Anytime one of the crew posts a new video, you will get a notification for it. And I'll have some more, hopefully, winning picks this week for you. I usually post them Saturday morning, and that will be for Edwards versus Muhammad. So make sure you go to sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV and subscribe to the BetterThan.Vegas page today. That's sportsgamblingpodcast.com/BTV. All right, featherweights, Charles Jourdain versus Marcelo Rojo. Jourdain actually had, I think, the tweet of the night last night. Did you see his tweet? He said there's one fighter he fears in his division, featherweight division, and that is Amanda Nunes. which is probably true.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Yeah, probably true. All right, so Rojo, I assume is Rojo.
I believe it is Rojo, yes.
All right, because he's probably a Brazilian, right?
Argentinian.
Well, I think we went through this before with him. Did he have a fight?
He did. He was supposed to fight Rayony Barcelos. It was actually your lock of the night before he fell out with COVID. And they rebooked Rojo, but they didn't rebook Barcelos yet.
Right. Okay, so this is a short notice fight, which I did know that. I just forgot that we actually had broken it down. Yes, this is his UFC debut, Rojo, that would be. And this is – he's taking on short notice because but he would have been in camp already because he had a fight just a couple weeks fall through. But he wasn't preparing for this guy. He is 16-6 as a pro, 8 knockouts, 6 submissions, so he's a finisher. He won his last fight via knockout. He has not actually fought in a fight, an official fight, since September of 2019, though. I've actually did the stats for this year for short notice fights for fighters who have been out of action for at least a year. There's been 30 of those so far in the UFC in 2021, which is an enormous amount. But that's basically because of the pandemic thing, if you heard of that. So what do you think I found when I crunched those numbers, Dan? How did those fighters do in their fights
on short notice?
Yeah, notice being less than a month or a month or less is what I consider short notice.
I'm gonna say less than 20% winners.
15 and 15. So it's made no difference whatsoever this year thus far. It's 50%, which is very strange.
Yeah, that is strange. So our usual breakdown, which I mean, the prior stats about having short notice fights, holds up over long periods of time. But yeah, right now we're running. I almost wonder too. You know, we don't have to get too much into this. I wonder too if some of that is because everybody knows a short notice fight might be coming now and is just like in camp right now, being like, this pandemic is going to get me into the top 15.
Right. Yeah, I may expand it and do 2020 if I have spare time, which I never do. But hey, anyhow, that was a sidebar, but it is interesting. I will still mention when someone's on short notice because I feel it is something to think of, even though the numbers haven't really bared out a small sample size thus far. One last thing for Rojo. He normally fights at bantamweight, at least as far when I look back at his record, that was the case. Is that as far as you know too, Dan?
Yeah, that's my understanding. But again, he hasn't fought in a very long time.
Right. Right. He's at plus 205 in this one. He's fighting up a weight class, short notice, making his debut. He's been out for, a year and a half? So that would explain the number probably. Plus, the guy he's fighting is pretty good, even if he's scared of a girl. That's Charles Jourdain. 10-3-1 as a pro, 7 knockouts, 3 submissions. So we've talking all finishes for his wins. And he's never – the other side of the ball, he's never been finished at all in a fight. He hasn't been so successful in the UFC, though. He's 1-2-1. His last two fights have resulted in a draw and a loss. He will be an inch taller, 7 years younger. He's at minus 270. He's my pick to win this one. I think he's finally going to get his first win in three fights it'll be.
Yeah, and so I will say I'm going to take him as well, and I will also say I'd like to excuse his record a little bit, because that first loss to Desmond Green was on short notice against, you know, a very talented wrestler in Desmond Green. He comes out and knocks out Doohoo Choi. He loses a split decision to Andre Feely, and if you go back and look, and I'm going to actually go back and look at his MMA decisions for the draw with Josh Kolobow too. If you go back and look, it's first of all, a few guys had him beating Feely, which, you know, is worth noting, including one of the judges, and pretty much every single media member had him beating Josh Kolobow, which I did as well. He clearly wins the second and third round, in my opinion. And for some reason, the judges are all crazy on that one. So, you know, like, yeah, his record doesn't look good, but there's a lot of reasons why. And, I mean, you can really ignore a loss to Andre Feely. I like him in this fight, not just because we're excusing his record here, but also Marcelo Rojo, if you look back at his fights, is a guy who comes forward, kind of swings wildly, isn't afraid to brawl a little bit. And he's going in there, like you said, with a guy who hurts people, right? And that's what Charles Jourdain does. You know, he knocked out Doohoo Choi, who, you know, notoriously took 850 punches to the dome from Cub Swanson and just kept coming. So, I mean, like, he is an amazing stand-up guy. I thought before, when Rojo was fighting Rayone Barcelos, it was a much worse fight for him because he was going to have to defend the grappling as well. I think he has more of a chance in this fight because he is going to be looking for that striking match with Charles Jourdain. But ultimately, I think Jourdain is a little bit more polished, and I might not be jumping at the negative 270 line, but I do like him to win this fight.
What would the line be, Jourdain versus Amanda Nunes?
Ooh. I mean, I think the rule when you're writing an Amanda Nunes line is you always start with three zeros. So
yeah, exactly.
Amanda Nunes negative 1,000? Like.
There you go. All right. Moving on to bantamweights. Ronnie Yaya versus Ray Rodriguez. Let me see. We'll start with Rodriguez. 16-7. As a pro, 3 knockouts, 8 submissions. He lost his UFC debut. He also lost in Dana White's Contender Series, so he's never won a fight in the octagon. He's lost 3 times by submission, which matters to, considering who he's fighting. He's, spoiler alert there, inch of height, 4 inches of reach, 3 years younger. So all that's in his favor, at least. The betting line is not, though. He's at plus 240. Yaya, 26-10-1-1 with 20 submissions. He is an insanely good grappler inside MMA and outside. He's quite decorated in the jiu-jitsu world. He's also 4-3 in the WEC. I always want to mention when the WEC guy is fighting, because WEC never die. He made his debut 20 years ago, almost September 2002. He made his debut, but doesn't seem to be slowing down. His last 5 fights, 3 wins, 1 loss, 1 draw. However, over his last 2 fights, he's only has 1 win. A loss and a draw. Striking stats are in his favor, and grappling stats may not be in his favor, but he's definitely the superior grappler here. Very small sample size. He's at minus 300. I'll take him at minus 300, and this can probably be one of our props. We'll make him win by submission and make that number nicer.
Yeah, I think this is an easy one. You take Hani Yaya by submission. Not only is Ray Rodriguez given up submission losses, but if you look at the type of person who beats Ronnie Yaya, you mentioned he hasn't had a really great record as of late. The people who are beating him are people like Ricky Simone, who is a really strong wrestler, as he's shown in his last fight against Brian Keller. Joe Soto, who's a good wrestler and grappler. I mean, he drew with Enrique Barzola, who, again, pretty damn good at wrestling. So Ray Rodriguez is not that, you know, and he kind of got taken down and ragdolled by Tony Gravely, and he shot kind of a desperation takedown on Brian Kelleher and got a submission snapped up. So if you're getting subbed by Brian Kelleher and your goal is to get the fight to the ground, you are not going to have a good time with Hani Yaya.
No, we do have a good time saying his name, though. Hani Yaya is one of the best. Yeah. Best names in the sport. Now we move on to the main event of the prelims. A couple of ladies who basically really need a win at this point. This will be women's flyweight. Courtney Casey versus JJ Aldrich. Courtney Casey is 9-8 as a pro, 3 knockouts, 4 submissions, 5-7 in the UFC. She swapped wins and losses between her last 4 fights. She lost her last fight. So she's 2-2 in the last 4, that would mean also. 2 inches taller, grappling stats in his favor, plus 110. Aldrich, 8-4 as a pro, 2 knockouts, has not fought in over a year. It was January of 2020 when she fought last. 4-3 in the UFC, 3-1 in Invicta before that. She lost her last fight, and she's only won one of her last three. 5 years younger, minus 135. I think I may go for a dog here because I want to pick a dog, and I don't think either lady is really that much better than the other. Maybe you've got a different opinion of that, though.
I agree with you to take the dog here, and I actually think one of the ladies is significantly better than the other, but it's Courtney Casey. I think Courtney Casey, Courtney Casey kind of written off as a fighter who wasn't really meeting her potential. You know, like we kind of put her in the same Alexa Grasso sort of realm, right? Like she's very physically gifted, but she just doesn't seem to be able to put it together. I think we're going to see a better Courtney Casey at flyweight since she's moved up. Yeah, she lost to Jillian Robertson. Jillian Robertson is an incredible grappler, right? She's a Dean Thomas black belt. So, like, let's not, you know, kind of put the pin in Courtney Casey at flyweight until we've seen her fight some other people. And, hey, like, Courtney Casey's first fight at flyweight, you know, she kind of did exactly what she needed to against Mara Romero-Barella. She did wind up on her back in that fight, but she quickly armbarred her and ended it in, like, I don't know, it was like 3 minutes or something like that. So I like Courtney Casey in this one because I think J.J. Aldrich does not threaten the grapple enough. Like, she is not going to shoot a takedown, or she is not going to score a takedown on Courtney Casey. She's also not a super physically strong flyweight. So you aren't expecting, you know, Courtney Casey to sort of face that, oh, I'm coming up in weight, I'm facing somebody much physically stronger than I'm used to. You know, I actually think J.J. Aldrich is probably going to be at a strength disadvantage here. So I kind of expect Courtney Casey to score a couple of takedowns here to mix it up enough. And, you know, on the feet, does Aldrich have a slight advantage? Yeah, and that's probably why she's in here as the favorite. But I don't think that advantage is enough to sway this fight. So I'm going with Courtney Casey.
Oren, we have all the same picks for the prelims, which actually it's probably good for you listeners out there, because that means they're all going to come through, because we never agree with one another.
Well, you got to tail me after last week, you know, because obviously
it's true.
I'm red hot.
It's true. I tailed you on one of the picks, the Fry one, but I didn't have a solid grasp of that fight. So you made it clear to me, obviously, that's the one I should pick. So, all right. This is going to be one hell of a long episode because we have 7 fights on the main card. So before we dive into those, let's tell you about our last sponsor here, Better Edge. Better Edge allows you to buy and sell betting positions like a stock market. Best part is it allows you to bet with no VIG. Since you're buying positions from other sports bettors, there's no house. So that's right, no VIG betting. They're currently legal in more than 40 states. If sports betting without a VIG, you literally can't beat it. So make sure you sign up today. Better Edge is BETTOREdge.com and use the promo code SGP for a free $10 bet. So that's BETTOREdge.com, promo code SGP. All right. Like I said, you guys are getting your money's worth, guys and gals, getting your money's worth this week. This is a long episode, and we've got 7 fights in the main card, which is pretty crazy. Middleweight. So we'll start with Eric Anders. They're in the Dentist Stewart. Anders, this one's at middleweight. He's been bouncing around light, heavyweight, middleweight. He's former collegiate football player. He's 13-5 in MMA, 8 knockouts, 1 submission, 5-5 in the UFC. He won his one and only fight in Bellator also. He's won 2 of his last 3, but he lost his last fight. He's only won 2 of his last 6. 1 inch taller, 1 inch of reach, +150 dog. As for the Dentist, he's 12-6-0-1, 7 knockouts, 1 submission. In the UFC, he's also 5-5 with 1 no contest. He also lost his last fight, and he's only won 1 of his last 3. He's gone 1-2. That would mean, according to my math, 3 years younger, striking and grappling stats in his favor, -185. I will take the Dentist here.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Dentist here, too. And you know, you mentioned Eric Anders has only got 2 wins in his last 6. By my count, he's got 1 win in his last 6 because he also he lost that fight to Gerald Muirchert. There is no way he won that fight either. Like, that is a hard loss, and I don't know how the judges came up with that one. But, yeah, Darren Stewart, worthy guy here for a couple of reasons. Number one, his wrestling, as far as his wrestling goes, is crazy underrated. I think not enough people give him credit for both offensive and defensive wrestling. And yeah, he had that weird loss Technically, it was at Cage Warriors 113 when that pandemic first started and they rescheduled that fight to an 170-pounder who out-wrestled him. But you got to remember, too, that he was preparing for a striking battle and then kind of had a last-second change, and all of a sudden he was fighting in a different place. It was very weird. So, you know, like, I actually think he, you know, split decision to Kevin Holland, split decision to Edmund Shahbazyan. He's really right on that cusp of the top 15. I think he's a high-quality opponent here. I also think there's a good chance he stings Eric Anders on the feet, because while Anders has got a lot of power, he can be a little reckless and he's kind of easy to hit. So I like Stewart here for that reason. And you know, like, I actually think he could probably out-grapple him if he wanted to. So, yeah, I like Darren Stewart quite a bit in this fight.
There we go. Another one we agree on. Let's keep moving until we find something to argue about here. Flyweights, Matias Nicolai making his return versus Manel Cape. I believe that's how you told me how his name was pronounced last time we broke down his fight, right? I believe that's
I still don't know the right answer.
Okay. I can't remember what they said.
I'll pretend again that I'm doing it right.
All right. You guys aren't here to hear pronunciations properly. That's for damn sure. So like I said, Nicolai will be making his re-debut to the UFC. He strangely was cut after going 3-1 in his first role, role through the organization. So overall, he's 15-2-1 with 4 knockouts, 5 submissions. Like I said, 3-1 in the UFC, and then he got cut, and he went 2-0 outside of the UFC, and now he's back. However, his last fight was August of 2019. He will be an inch taller. He's a dog in this one, plus 120. As for the guy who will say his name's Cape, 15-5, 9 knockouts, 5 submissions. He lost his UFC debut, which he seemed surprised by, but he clearly lost it. He's taking this fight on short notice. 2-inch reach advantage, small sample size, but striking and grappling stats are leaning in his favor. He's at minus 150. What are you thinking about this one?
I think I'm going to take the dog in this one.
I
will first of all say I'm a big Manel Cape fan, but from before his UFC debut.
Right.
His UFC debut I was not a fan of. And the fact that he was so shocked that he lost that fight, first of all, is alarming to me because, like, mm-hmm. he clearly lost that fight. He did not go out with any intention of winning. And if that mindset is not different, he's going to get steamrolled here, because I think people forget just how good Matthews Nicolau is. He's a guy who came into the UFC and he beat up John Moraga. He beat up Luis Smolka, and he got caught by a head kick by Dustin Ortiz, which certainly there's no shame in that because Ortiz is a beast. And then that's when the UFC was like pretending to cut their flyweight division and they cut him for no good reason. He's since then looked very good. He's continued to look very good. And I actually think he is a sneaky good possible guy to be, you know, as a title challenger. He's got 2 Japanese necktie submissions. He's crazy skilled on the ground. And I think if Cape can keep it on the feet and is fighting like his old dangerous, you know, Ryzen self, he could win this fight. But as far as like whether or not I'm confident in him doing that, I'm not. And if it hits the ground, Nicolau is a very, very talented jiu-jitsu artist. So I think Nicolau here has more avenues to win. And I'm also just worried about the mind space of Manel Cape.
Yeah, I agree. I would like to take him because he is such a highly regarded prospect. But yeah, that last fight did not go well, and his reaction after it was very, very poor. So plus he's fighting another killer here. So this is a worthy dog we're both taking. And I know the next fight we're going to agree on because we broke it down a few weeks ago. It's Ashley Yoder versus Angela Hill. This would be women's strawweight. Don't have to go too much into it because I'll give you all the stats and stuff, but we broke it down a few weeks ago before it was postponed. Yoder, we're both fans of her, but we think she's going to lose. Spider Monkey, 8-8, correct.
Yeah, you nailed it.
8-6 is a pro, 4 submissions, victories. She's never been finished herself. She's 3-5 in the UFC. However, she's won 3 of her last 5 fights, and she won her last fight, which probably saved her job. 4 inches taller, 5 inches of reach, 2 years younger, grappling stats in her favor, plus 275 is the line on that. The line's actually increased since we broke it down the first time. PointsBet, I believe, has it at plus 275. I think it was only around plus 205 or so when we broke it down the first time a few weeks ago. Angela Hill, 12-9. with 5 knockouts, 7-9 in the UFC through a couple stints here. She's lost her last two. She had won 3 straight before then, so she won 3 of 5. That would make it. Striking stats in her favor, -360 favorite. So, like I said, the lines shifted far more in her favor since we broke it down a few weeks ago. She beat Yoder July of 2017 via unanimous decision. I think we both probably think she's going to win this one via the same way.
Yeah, I'm going to say the same thing, and I'll give you guys the abbreviated version. She's faster and a little bit cleaner on the feet. She's going to put Yoder against the cage. Yoder probably isn't going to get enough of her grappling going to have any continued success. That's there you it. Go. Take Angela Hill by decision.
There you go. Featherweight, Dan Ige versus, who's he fighting? Gavin Tucker, a Canadian. Oh, maybe I can
betray your country again?
Treat you again. Let's go with Tucker first. 13-1. With 4 knockouts, 6 submissions, his only loss is a decision loss, so he's never been finished. He's 4-1 in the UFC, 3 straight wins. Grappling stats are in his favor. He's a very good grappler. He's taking this fight on short notice. He's at +112. Dan Ige is 14-3, 3 knockouts, 5 submissions. Never been finished in a fight either, so you may want to bet this one going to decision, regardless of who you want to pick to win. 6-2 in the UFC. He also was on the Contender Series. He won his fight there. He lost his last fight, but he won 6 straight before then. So he lost his UFC debut, won 6 straight, then lost his last fight. Inch taller than Tucker, 5 inches of reach, 5 years younger, striking stats in his favor, -141. And if it's a Canadian, you know I'm going to bet against them, so I'm going to take Ige in this one.
And I'm going to tell you that you're wrong again for picking against the Canadian. So I'm going to ride with the Canadians here, and I'm going to support your country for a quick second. Because, listen, Gavin Tucker, you're right. He's got that one loss on his record, and he didn't get finished in it. But it's worth noting that that was one of the worst non-stoppages of all time. The guy was basically on his deathbed at the hands of Rick Glenn. And I think what he learned in that fight is a very valuable lesson. While he can stand and bang with literally everybody in the division and not go out because he can take a beating like no other, he also learned, hey, I'm pretty damn good at this grappling thing. And when I use both of those things together, he's freaking dangerous. And if you look at his last 3 fights since then, not only has he been dangerous with his hands in those fights, but he's also been very good with his takedowns. He took down Sungwoo Choi 5 times. He took down Justin James only once, but it was only because he only needed one before he subbed him. And then he took down Billy Quarantillo, who everybody was lauding as this amazing grappler. He took him down 7 times. So Gavin Tucker basically realized, like, hey, I'm good at this. Why am I going in there and banging with people who can knock me out or people who can hurt me? And since then, he's been amazing. And I actually think that that plays really well against a guy like Dan Ige, who, while Dan Ige likes to grapple, he likes to be on top when he's grappling. And in addition to that, I'm a little bit worried about Dan Ige slugging with him on the feet. Because if Dan Ige starts to get defensive about the grappling, starts to try to defend those takedowns, starts to get too focused on that, Gavin Tucker has big right hands in there. And I think, actually, Gavin Tucker could probably hurt him there. So we're looking at a situation where as long as Gavin Tucker goes in with that same mentality as he has the last 3 fights, I actually think he's got an advantage here.
And Ige only has 59% takedown defense. So it's very, very solid pick. It's a hard one to pick for me.
It's also worth noting that some of those takedowns he's given up to, not to guys you think of as being particularly strong grapplers either. You know, like he got taken down by Calvin Kattar, who, while Calvin Kattar is great, not a wrestler, right? He got taken down by Kevin Aguilar. I don't know how I feel about getting taken down by Kevin Aguilar, but ultimately, you know, having takedown to those, not the greatest thing in the world. He also got taken down 4 times on the Contender Series. Granted, that was quite a long time ago, but, you know, yeah, you're right. 59% is nothing to write home about.
No. So I finally differ from Dan. I'm not confident with the pick, but I'm not changing now.
No, because you've got to betray your country.
Exactly. But mostly because I was going to say we have to move on to our favorite part of a fight card, which would be hashtag chunky guys.
We have a
heavyweight battle. Ben Rothwell, Felipe Lins. Lins, 14-5 row with 8 knockouts and 4 submissions. He's been knocked out 4 times. It's something of note. 4 of his 5 losses are via getting his lights put out. He's 0-2 in the UFC after going 4-0 in PFL. He also was in Bellator. He was 3-3 in Bellator. He's 4 years younger than Rothwell, but everyone's younger than Rothwell at this point, basically. He's +100 dog. Because Rothwell, since making his debut in January of 2001, so we're talking over 20 years now for Big Ben Rothwell. He's gone 38-13, 28 knockouts and 6 submissions, 8-7 in the UFC. He's only won 2 of his last 6 fights. He lost his last fight also. He's 2 inches taller. He also, based on their last weigh-ins, he should be around 30 pounds heavier than Lins. He weighs in right around 265, and Lins, I believe, was 234, 235 his last fight. Grappling stats and the eyeball test are both in Rothwell's favor. He's at minus 125. Sweatless, this is a hard one to pick also. I'm going to go with the underdog and take some plus money, hopefully.
I'm going to differ with you on that one. I love Ben Rothwell in this fight. The thing for me about why I can't go with Lins is that if you look at Lins's fights in the UFC so far, the biggest alarm for me on him is that he just doesn't have any urgency. You know, you look at that loss to Andrei Arlovsky, he was getting picked apart from the outside, and he was just like, this is fine. I'm okay with this. I'm okay with being picked apart from distance. And if you look at the types of people he's beaten, he's beaten guys who aren't afraid to rush forward and be reckless, right? Like, he beat Alex Nicholson, who storms forward. He beat Jared Roshaw, who just wants to be in the clinch with you. He beat Josh Copeland, who just wants to be in the clinch with you. Ben Rothwell is, first of all, better in the clinch than all of those guys. And second of all, also, as we've noted in the last couple of Ben Rothwell fights, is willing to just fight a point fight from the outside. And I think, you know, he beat Ovin St. Preux that way. He was beating Stefan Struve that way. And, I mean, then he kicked him in the balls 7 times. But, you know, like, he wasn't able to beat Marcin Tybura because Tybura put the pressure on him. But, like, I don't think Lins is going to do that. So, because I don't think Lins is going to put the pressure on Rothwell, I think Rothwell's probably going to win. And maybe this is controversial in a heavyweight fight, a boring distance fight, point fight, similar to the way that Andrei Arlovsky has kind of reinvented himself. So I like Rothwell here. And if you're looking for a prop too, not the worst idea to look at him by decision or the over in this fight as well.
There you go. I'm not confident again, but I'm sticking with it because I have to betray my fellow Wisconsiners, I guess.
That's basically Canada, right?
Basically Canada, yeah. Both have silly accents and whatnot. Co-main event, light heavyweights. Another Canadian, Misha Sirkinov, will be fighting Ryan Spann. Let's see if I do it again or not, guys. Ryan Spann, 18-6, 4 knockouts, 11 submissions, 4-1 in the UFC. He was 1-1 in the Contender Series. He lost his last fight, and he was knocked out in that fight. He's 2 inches taller, 2 inches of reach on Sirkinov, 4 years younger, plus 112. Sirkinov's 15-4, 4 knockouts, 9 submissions. He's 6-3 in the UFC, but he's only gone 2-3 over his last 5 fights. So he started off 4-0. He did win his last fight, though, but that was back in September 2019. Striking and grappling stats in his favor, minus 141 points. That. And I'm taking him, surprisingly.
You're taking a – well, I guess he was originally born in Latvia, so yeah, it's not exactly. You're not really supporting the Canadians, just somebody who moved to Canada.
And I think he trains out of Vegas, too, at this point. So
yeah, I think he's an extreme couture guy or something right. Like that, right? So, yeah, I like Sirkinov in this fight, too. My big concern here is Ryan Spann's takedown defense. It didn't look good against Devin Clark. And for me – Sirkinov is actually probably a more talented grappler than a lot of people in this division. I think Spann is going to want to keep it standing. And I mean, look, Sirkinov took down Jimmy Crute, who I rank very highly as a grappler. And not only did he take him down, he hit him with a Peruvian necktie, which is just crazy to say out loud. So I think Sirkinov's grappling game is heavily underrated. And as long as he gets Spann there, I think he's actually going to finish him too.
Peruvian necktie is crazy to say out loud. It's true. It's crazy to watch too. So
yeah. We were talking about Japanese neckties earlier too. We got all kinds of neckties.
It's true. All over the world here. Go with welterweight main event. They finally given up on Leon Edwards versus the recently retired and then not retired after his dictators told him he's not going to retire. His UFC dictator plus his Chechen dictator. That would be what's his name again? Chimaev.
Kamzat
Chimaev. Yes, he was told by His he's having a real hard time with COVID. Imagine that. And he seemed like he was retiring, and then he was swiftly told by, like I said, his UFC dictator Dana White that no, you will not be retiring. And then he was told by his actual warlord in Chechnya that no, you will not be retiring. So anyhow, let's move on to Leon Edwards. Last minute replacement, whatever you want to call it, short notice. Bilal, remember thy name, Muhammad. So let's break him down first. Mr. Muhammad, whose name we will never forget, is 18-3 with 4 knockouts, 1 submission. He's 9-3 in the UFC, 2-0 in Bellator before that. He's won 4 straight fights. He will be taking this on short notice because he just fought a few weeks ago. He is at plus 200 going into this one. Leon Edwards has been on the shelf forever, jockeying for a title fight, and he's not getting one. He's 18-3 with 6 knockouts and 3 submissions. So you may want to – this may be one you want to bet going to the decision. So now the guy finishes a heck of a lot of fights. Plus, Edwards has never been finished in his 3 losses. He is 10-2 in the UFC. He's won 8 straight fights, but he's not actually fought since July of 2019. A lot of fights falling through and a lot of him posturing for better opponents. He's 3 inches taller, 2 inches of reach, 3 years younger, minus 263. I'll take the chalk in this one, even though I do like remember the name.
Yeah, and I remembered the name this time, but I'm going with Leon Edwards. I really want Bilal Muhammad to do well because I have been sick of the Leon Edwards story about him deserving a title shot when his last win was damn near 3 years or 2 years ago at this point, and against Rafael Dos Anjos. But the bottom line is like, as long as this is the Leon Edwards we saw then and the Leon Edwards we saw during that massive win streak, he's just a better version of Bilal Muhammad, right? Like he's a slightly better distance boxer. He gives you just like a little bit more in terms of defensive boxing, right? Like he's harder to hit. And in addition to that, like, I actually think he's just, like, a little bit better of a wrestler, right? Like, and he likes to mix it up just a little bit more than Bilal Muhammad does. So, yeah, I like, just think that there are so many little tiny pieces that just make him a little bit... I mean, like, look, the guy took Rafael Dos Anjos down 3 times. The guy took Gunnar Nelson down. The guy took Vicente Luque down. The guy took, you know, Albert Tumanov down, who's, you know, like, while he's not still in the UFC, is one of the top welterweights as well. You know, he took Bam Bam Barbarena down 3 times. So, like, he's really good at his wrestling when he does mix it in. And I think it's just, like I said, just a little bit better than Bilal Muhammad everywhere. And I think as long as he is still that person, we can be comfortable picking him. Granted, it has been 2 years since we've seen him. There has been all kinds of questions about what his training looks like and all that kind of stuff. So I'm definitely not putting him anywhere near our lock. But with that being said, I do like him to pick here.
Yeah, so probably minus 263 is not a number we're going to jump at for this fight, correct?
Yeah, I'm not jumping for joy on that one at all.
Okay. We hinted at a few props and parlays. Do you want to make some official ones now?
Yeah, I would say, again, I kind of mentioned before that I like Ben Rothwell by decision, and I think, you know, you can probably make those lines fairly juicy. Being that it's pretty close to an even fight as is. So if you put him in there by decision in a heavyweight fight, you're probably going to get a nice line on that. And also, I said before, Hani Yaya by submission. I think, you know, Ray Rodriguez with his submission losses on his record, with his questionable takedown defense, with the fact that he likes to shoot himself and Hani Yaya scrambles and counters takedowns really well. You know, I think everything leads to a Hani Yaya submission there. So, yeah, I think those two are the two that I like the best as far as props go. You know, you mentioned the main event going the distance. I think that's smart too, but I think that's probably not going to come in too juicy unless you pick somebody to. You know, like the over-under is probably going to be 4.5. So, yeah, I like the over in that too, but ultimately you're probably not getting too good of a return there.
No. All right. So now it's my turn to pick a lock. I would say Angela Hill, but I don't want to lock in a minus 360. That's pretty serious.
Yeah, let's go. The number was before was way better. I probably would have locked her in if we were still down at 250. But yeah, I don't like 300.
I will take Matthew Smellsberger. Semmelsberger. I'll take him as my lock at -150 over Jason Witt.
I like that play. He was actually I had two circled, so I guess I'm gonna go to my backup here instead of the starter. He was probably my 1A pick. My 1B pick here will be Misha Cirkunov, -145-ish against Ryan Spann. I just think, like I said before, Spann's takedown defense worries me. If he can keep this at distance, is there a chance? Yeah, but is there a chance he keeps it at distance with an absolute bowling ball like Misha Cirkunov? I don't think so. So I'm going to take my lock is Misha Cirkunov.
All right, there you go. That is far enough free entertainment for you guys for 1 week. We've gone well over an hour, so there you go. You're welcome. In the meantime, make sure you read all our writings over at sportsgamblingpodcast.com. Dan is a writer there as well now. I'll have my UFC column up later on this week. Make sure you also read both of our stuff over at MMA-manifesto.com and enter the Pick'em contest, which I run on there. Little news flash there. Sports Gambling Podcast has come aboard as one of our new sponsors, so they will be giving away a $50 gift card to whatever retailer you would like it at to the winner of our Pick'em contest. So make sure you enter that this coming week and every week going forward. Follow us on Twitter. Jeff Fox Writer would be mine, and Dan would be Gumby Vreeland. And until that time, actually, let me leave you with some wise words from the legendary Lemmy of Motorhead when he said that, I was born to lose. Gambling's for fools, but that's the way I like it, baby. I ain't going to live forever. We'll see you next week, guys.